My name is Patricia Pullum. I come from Arundel and Brighton, Catholic diocese. I'm also a member of Christian CND and Pax Christi. I have a Jewish brother-in-law of whom I am very fond, and we need to visit. We have totally different views on what is happening in Palestine. My brother-in-law writes articles so pro-IDF. But I said, please send them to me. Let me read them, because it's so important that I hear what you are saying, which doesn't make it easy. And my sister says, I don't even want to go there anymore because of this difficult situation. And the whole concept he has is so opposed to the concept we have, in which all the ordinary Palestinians, because they support Hamas, are therefore of themselves, they are also terrorists and need to be obliterated. And yet, in most ways, in more personal ways, he is a kind and loving person. And so much of what you said resonated. And thank you so much.
Thank you. I won't respond in great length because I want to give others the opportunity to speak. I visited Israel and Palestine just in May, a couple of months ago, and had four very intense days with various different individuals and NGOs and so on. And I think what I would say in response is I absolutely saw the lack of a common language. The opposing views don't really engage with one another. They speak in their silos. They don't understand the other perspective, and they're not interested in trying to understand it. For families, obviously, that adds a layer of complexity. But living peaceably, as I assume you are doing alongside each other, is the first step. And each of us can only affect the small bit of the world that we're a part of. And model what we want to see for the wider world. But thank you for sharing.
Tom Ormiston from Ellesmereport. The proceedings, the daily proceedings of the House of Commons start off, as John will know, with a book of prayer from the Church of England Common Prayer Book. Do they have such a proceeding... in the House of Lords?
Yes, we do. And in essence, that is the main purpose of having bishops there, because we take it in turns to lead the prayers at the start of each session in the chamber. And so, each of us will do a duty week. And the only, the only thing we absolutely have to do during that duty week is say the prayers at the start of session. Yeah.
I heard this week, when all the new MPs arrived in the House of Commons, one of them said to me, you didn't tell me that every time we go into the chamber, in order to book a seat, we have to go in for prayers. There was a question over here, I think. Yes, please.
My name is Dylinda Eldreamer. I come from Hitchin, North Hertfordshire. I'm here up. Both as a member of Westminster and also of the Green Party. You mentioned earlier that so many people didn't vote in this election, and that is true, 40% didn't. It's almost as if the party that got elected was none of the above, because it was the biggest percentage that got effectively voted for in, by the country. What a, and that most of the people that didn't engage with the election, they are young people. Is it time for the church to educate its members and to bring themselves behind the campaign for proportional representation? Because if there is something that is unjust, is the unjust and undemocratic system of first past the post. And until the church and the population brings themselves behind, we will not have a just elected government where people feel that they, it's worth voting for because their voice will be represented. What are your views?
Thank you, and I'm sure John will have news on this. We were talking about it over supper. I suspect there are different views on this. This is one of the good examples of needing to listen carefully to the opposing sides, as it were. My hunch is that no system is perfect, but I absolutely hear your point. I don't know that it's something that the church necessarily would campaign on, because I suspect there are differences of opinion. John's interesting idea was that it should start from a much more local level and then work its way up to Westminster. John, I'm not going to speak for you. You say what you think.
Yeah, we've got, thank you for raising the issue, and we should be debating it as a whole society about whether the system includes people or excludes people. And I say that from an inner city neighbourhood that I represented in West Leeds. And I would think we've got it already for the mayors of our regions. We've got it already for the regional elections. We did have it for something called the European elections as well. And I think maybe it will come for the local council elections. What I found is, and I'd have to say I personally am in favour of looking at the system, and there's no perfect one, but I think we need a more inclusive system. And I don't think Parliament's going to vote for it, because once they get there, they don't want to vote for their own Christmas, as it were. So, but I think what you have done is put the issue on the table here, as it were, and it should be perhaps discussed in some of the groups as well. I don't think we should ask the bishops to carry all the weight of it. Let us ferment the ideas in our local communities and push them up at the politicians.
It's a similar argument to bishops in the House of Lords, actually. You know, there are many who feel that it's not right. And I think the conversation should happen. It's, you know, there are clearly advantages. And while we're in there, we try to use our privilege well. But I can see the argument against and certainly think that the conversation should happen. And similarly with this, yes, the country should be having the conversation, but whether it's the church's role to get... I don't know. Maybe it is, or some churches and some Christians. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? We have differences of opinion on so many things, but groups... That doesn't mean we shouldn't have groups speaking out.
And also to remember, it's not one or the other, that there are a range of proportional representations and alternative votes. So perhaps we experiment in different places. Why not have the diversity of it? Other questions? There was one at the front here, please.
Hi, Eddie Slavinsky. I'm a Mill Hill missionary, and I work also for Missio. I'm reflecting upon end-of-life care, euthanasia. When politicians see that we are so divided on many issues between the churches too, how can we hope to influence them? How can we hope to call them to see the common good and to see true Christian values when we are so divided ourselves?
I think that's a very valid question, and it's a challenge to us. We have done it before, haven't we? The Jubilee 2000 campaign was an incredibly effective one when Christians kind of joined forces and put aside differences. The challenge now is that society as a whole is so polarised, and again, we were talking over supper about this, that sometimes as the church, instead of modelling better behaviour, we simply conform to the ways of the world. And the pull to the polarised binary opposites is very, very strong. And what happens is the middle ground gets hollowed out, and all we hear are the loud voices at the extremes. I mean, that's a challenge to us just as much as it is to our politicians and to those outside the church. And I think it weakens our case when the world sees us behaving in similar ways. So again, I'm kind of back to this modelling. I'm a great proponent of the fact that we can only each model a better way of being and living in our own lives. And if we can do that in our communities, and then if we can do it across our communities as Christian ecumenical brothers and sisters, then actually that's quite a force. But are we able to do it? That's the big question.
Any more? One right at the back.
Thank you. Raymond Friel from Caritas Social Action Network. Many things you said, Bishop Gully, struck me. Thank you so much for a really insightful and powerful keynote. The one point I'd like to just ask you about is when you said that communities need to get into Westminster. It's a practical question, really, is how do we do that? So it's a question really about effective advocacy. You know, I'm thinking about our smaller groups, our parish groups, our school groups, that often feel detached from the decision-making and legislative-making process. How can we not just oppose unjust legislation, but shape and propose just legislation? So any practical advice for effective advocacy?
Yeah, that's a really good point, I think. And generally, as human beings, we're quite good at noticing the things we don't like and being critical, and less good at building on the positives and publicly saying positive things. Again, that's one of the things as bishops in the House of Lords we try and do. We do try and say when we agree with whichever the government is that's putting forward. We're not just there to criticise the sitting government. We're there to try and improve the legislation. And sometimes that means saying, this is really good. This is good legislation. We're behind it and we agree with it. I mean, individuals and small groups can get passes and come into Westminster to see what it's like. I think MPs and indeed members of the House of Lords can encourage that and can enable it and can make it happen. There are all kinds of different ways of connecting with your local MP. I mean, John would be able to say much more about this. But using your local MP as a constituency MP, delivering letters, campaigns to Number 10, writing to your MP, writing to the Prime Minister, being active through existing groups. I mean, Caritas would be one. I've worked with a number of different groups, Refugee Council and so on, working in collaboration with groups. If I had a private member's motion that actually never went through in the end because a general election was called, but a private member's bill on humanitarian visas for asylum seekers. And I worked very closely with the Refugee Council on that. So there are a number of charities and small groups who will contact members of the House of Lords. I will get contacted and they'll say, we'd really like to, you know, is there anything you can do for us? I met with a group of young people from Palestine recently who are working to bring some of their relatives over. I met with a young group of young adults who'd arrived here as unaccompanied minors and who are wanting to put forward the idea for each unaccompanied minor to be allocated a guardian when they arrive in this country who can guide them through the whole process. You know, these are groups who've contacted me or I've heard of, and then we've worked together to try and bring either a question into the House of Lords or a private member's motion or whatever it happens to be. So collaboration, I think, is probably the...
One last one. Oh, there's one at the back. I've got a lot of... Are you OK for a few more minutes?
I'm fine if others aren't.
Yeah, we've two or three more. This one at the front here. Just strap down here, and then you'll have to nip back quickly to the back again. Thank you. You're doing a great job.
Michael Fulham of Christian CND. So many countries say that to ensure peace, we must have lots of weapons. It sounds crazy to me, because if you have weapons, then you're not really ensuring peace. Friendship between nations at all levels, the friendship between all the countries and nations, the national leaders, ambassadors, diplomats, if they really got to know each other and were friendly, that would be much better than relying on weapons, which seems crazy. And, of course, Jesus would agree, I'm sure, because our loving Father, Son and Holy Spirit, they would agree that love is much more important than weapons. If ambassadors and diplomats and national leaders of different countries could see that friendship between themselves, building on that and not relying on weapons to obtain peace, that would be fine. Of course, Jesus is our guide, and we have to follow that as well between everyone. The people sitting around here should be everybody's friends. So there we have it.
Thank you. Yes, I think you're invoking the spirit of Bishop George Bell there. And I think you're speaking to that tension that I mentioned between idealism and pragmatism, of course, where there people will land on different sides. But at the heart, of course, you're absolutely right. And that is the challenge to humanity. If we could live on the basis of love and friendship and meaningful relationships, we wouldn't need any weapons. The thing that sometimes fascinates me, I come from Iran, a country that, as you know, is developing uranium in an effort to create nuclear weapons. And the West, of course, is doing everything it possibly can, rightly in my view, to prevent that happening, when, of course, the West itself is sitting on nuclear weapons. So there does seem a certain kind of irony and hypocrisy, even, in the notion that the West feels it has the right to sit on weapons because it knows best, but it prevents other countries. So, yeah, it's a very, very complex, messy political situation. And for me, I think hits right at the heart of that tension needed between, or the dialogue needed between idealism and pragmatism. Mm. Thank you.
There was room right at the back, I think. The person, I've got three or four at the back now.
David Archibald, Hexham, Newcastle, Justice and Peace Council. One of the things, obviously, you're one of the Lords spiritual, but I think one of the big problems is that the Lords of Mammon, that obviously have lots of individuals who, for instance, lots of treasurers of political parties end up in the House of Lords. And obviously, I think cash and getting access, because I'm sure if I had £1 million, I'd be finding much, it was prepared to donate to someone, it'd be much easier for me to get access to ministers, to say things, to get my viewpoint across. How much of a problem is lobbying, money, and obviously what do you think should be done about it?
Gosh, that's a really difficult one, isn't it? I think Labour have just announced they're going to get rid of the hereditaries in the House of Lords, haven't they? So I think the House of Lords does need to be smaller. It's become unmanageably large. So it does need to be smaller, perhaps conversations about, dare I say it, age limits. I mean, we have to go at bishops. We have to go at 70 when we retire, apart from the archbishops who are then made peers in their own right. Where there is power, corruption can creep in. And, you know, again, I know parts of the Middle East well. I think, relatively speaking, this country is in a better place than many others, but that doesn't exempt us, absolutely. Power and money and corruption are part of politics, and where we see it, we have to speak out against it, and we have to act with propriety ourselves.
Okay, there was very, very last one at the back.
My name is Frank Regan. My situation at the moment is post-Catholic. And so I worship with the Quakers on Sunday. We all remember the words of Archbishop Helder Camara of many years ago when he spoke in terms of, when I give bread to the poor, they call me a saint. And when I ask why the poor are hungry, they call me a communist. And I wonder if it isn't time for the Christian community to start running the risk of being called a communist. Particularly trying to engage with the relationship between personal and community poverty that we see in, for example, the 2 million children who live in poverty in this country, and structural injustice and structural poverty. We need a more radical analysis of how the structure works in such a way that it oppresses the poor. And we haven't been able to articulate a way of getting at that particular cancer in society.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I think that's a really important point. I think as Christians and as churches, we're very good at putting sticky plasters on, being there to alleviate suffering, to support people and so on. And there is a need for that. Increasingly, I think there is awareness that what we need to be doing is tackling the injustices at source. And the structures, as you say. I had a conversation recently with people from the Trussell Trust Food Bank, and they're very, very engaged in wanting to ask those, you know, pertinent questions about how we change the structures of injustice, not just having more and more food banks in order to feed those who need them. So it's both and, but you're quite right to raise it, and it is something that as Christians who are active in peace and political networks, we ought to be doing as much as we can and speaking out about. So thank you.
We've had a great session. I was just reminded, talking about, I don't go back to the House of Commons and Parliament in the last 10 years or so, but I recall my son, when he was a teenager, asking me, could his mate come down to visit the House of Commons and look around? And his friend was a traveller, a young man who was a traveller in Leeds, and he said, but he can't read or write, Dad, but he's interested in kings and queens, and he would really love to see the Palace of Westminster. So he came down, and he came in the hall, the Great Hall, which you may recall was where the Queen was when she died, where they left the coffin. It was empty. So I invite him in, and I'm starting to show him round. And the Great Hall has a beautiful hammer beam roof, the oldest in England, built in the 13th century. So it's something I know. So I'm giving it off about the roof, and I look round and I can't see him, because he and his family and his dad had been laying tar on the M62 for 50 years. They work with floors. He's on his hands and knees looking at the slabs that made up the floor. And he said to me, when is it, he said, when you people in here get your heads out of the clouds and start to pay attention to feet on the ground? Bishop Gooley, can I thank you for an incredibly inspirational and a visionary example, really, of political engagement at the highest level. And I'd have to say, some of us may have come on the journey to say perhaps we change the system for proportional representation. There's a discussion of the future of the House of Lords at the present time. But I thought your phrase for the purpose of the bishops was really powerful. We need to stand for the cross, the suffering, the challenges, and the gospel of redemption in that place. And I thought you powerfully witnessed the need for a faith voice within our public discourse at the highest level. But thank you for sharing with us and getting us off to such a great start with so much food for thought for our conference. Thank you.